Wah bam 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 tootie poot, oh rude, tootie poot, oh rude.
The music industry was dealt a serious blow this weekend with the loss of three icons. Little Richard, born Richard Penniman, died of bone cancer on Saturday at the age of 87. The self-described king and queen of rock and roll, Little Richard had a larger-than-life persona and musical chops to match. With hits like Tutti Frutti, Slippin' and Slidin', and Good Golly Miss Molly, he embodied rock and roll and inspired future music legends like the Beatles, David Bowie, Jimi Hendrix, Prince, and Bob Dylan. He was unapologetic about who he was on stage, a black queer man, and he was vocal about the outsized impact he had on an industry that never gave him the credit he deserved. Two other giants in music also died this weekend from non-coronavirus-related causes: famed music executive Andre Harrell and legendary soul singer Betty Wright, who were 59 and 66 years old, respectively. All in all, an incredibly tough weekend for some legendary black performers who influenced most of the music you hear today in some way. A clean up woman is a woman who gets all the lovely girls leave behind. Here to discuss the legacy of these three music legends is Hanif Abdurraqib, a poet, essayist, and cultural critic from Columbus, Ohio, and the author of several books, including Go Ahead in the Rain, Notes to a Tribe Called Quest. Hanif, so glad to have you here with us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's start with Little Richard. What made him stand out as a performer, as an artist?
Well, I mean, I think that if you are lucky enough or if you have the time to watch his old performances, I would say from about the mid-50s to when he kind of revived his career in the mid to late 60s, you see someone who understood the control they had over an audience. He was, I think, an elite level performer, but also just kind of plainly, I mean, his music was also good. His hooks were catchy. His songs were always building towards some kind of, you know, rapturous swelling that could really capture the ear and hearts of many. He was a great writer and he had an incredible voice. And, you know, I think between him and Sister Rosetta Tharpe, they kind of ushered in an era of rock and roll that is a blueprint for what we know it as now.
Mm. Were his onstage and offstage personas the same?
Not particularly. And I think that also, that question also depends on the season of life that Little Richard was in. I mean, I think that, and of course, I'm speaking as someone who did not know him at all, but you read stories about how he was sometimes reserved and then sometimes as flamboyant as he was on stage. But I think that he seemed to come alive his most when there was an audience. So I do think that I the more people that were around to kind of watch him or be a party to his personality, the more he tuned into it.
Mm. Who are some of the artists that we might not know about today had it not been for Little Richard?
Well, I mean, I think James Brown and Jimi Hendrix and the Beatles, all these people who started with him, you know, Jimi Hendrix was his guitar player for a while.
Right.
And so there are artists who, you know, I think a thing that I hope does not get lost in the discussing of Little Richard's legacy was that he was so kind and generous to artists who were coming up a bit after him. And I think one thing that hurt him a great deal was that some of those artists, after they surpassed him in popularity, perhaps did not share that same generosity with him. I mean, there's a notorious interview from the 90s in Rolling Stone, I think it was maybe 1993, after Paul McCartney had gotten some Lifetime Achievement Award, and Little Richard was genuinely hurt that McCartney didn't thank him. He thanked all these other originators and all these other people who helped the Beatles. And, you know, Little Richard played a huge hand in helping the Beatles and wasn't thanked. So I think that there's some, it's always seemed to me like there was some sadness there for someone who was very generous to a generation of artists who came in after him when he didn't have to be. You know, at the point he would offer up gigs and offer up opening slots. And I think this is because of how Richard came up. I mean, one of his first performances was because Sister Rosetta Tharpe let him open for her and then paid him money, which inspired him to keep pursuing performances. So I think he paid that forward with a generation of artists and was not always properly thanked for that.
Mm. What role did his race and his sexuality play in the way that Little Richard was or was not recognized?
His race, and I can speak most clearly to his race, I mean, I think that the removal of black musicians from the history of American music is, you know, extends far beyond Little Richard, though I think he is one of the most prominent cases of that. I think that he spent a long amount of his career and his life kind of shouting at the powers that be, attempting to remind them of what he'd accomplished. And I don't think he'd have to do that if he were white. I don't think he'd have to do that if he were, say, Elvis. But I think the idea that the public was, quote unquote, not ready for an artist like Richard to be at the height of rock and roll, or Sister Rosetta Tharpe or Big Mama Thornton or any of these people who were ascending to the height of musically, I think we're pushing forward the sound and style of the early era of rock and roll, the blues, of even country music. You know, I think race played a role in them being removed from their own legacies. And it was done so using the idea that America was not ready to praise a black person as a musical innovator when, you know, the history of American music is the history of black music. There's no detaching the two.
Let's talk about André Harrell now, another giant in the music industry who died this weekend. He was 59 years old. The cause has been listed as heart failure. And Harrell was responsible for launching the careers of some huge names in hip-hop and R&B. What did his label Uptown Records mean for the industry?
I think that Uptown, aside from André Harrell being the person who first kind of spotted Diddy, what Uptown Records did, I think, was create a style, an aesthetic, and a sound that, for me and my generation, felt like it turned the tide of what was being played both on the radio and what music videos looked like. I remember those early Mary J. Blige music videos and feeling like music was being made specifically for me and for the people I loved, which isn't to say that before this there was no music I loved, but I think that his lens was maybe focused a bit younger and how to get kind of R&B to a younger generation who could see it as something cool, something new, and reshape the style of it, I think Uptown was kind of just the next thing in a long line of R&B that was already attempting that and already doing it to some extent, but he really brought it to the world, particularly Mary J. Blige, you know, with Jodeci. There were a lot of moving parts in Uptown Records that felt like they were changing the wave of R&B sound, hip-hop and R&B, but I think especially R&B.
And he didn't just work in the music industry, but he also expanded to film and television and articulated this really big vision for documenting and celebrating black culture, right? Can you remind us of some of his work in those spaces?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the film Strictly Business, which mm-hmm. came out in 1991. And I particularly, even beyond Strictly Business, I remember New York Undercover, a TV show that ran on Fox for about 40 years, and from 94 to maybe 97, 98. And I think that he was invested, and those are just two that jumped to mind immediately, but I think beyond that, his scope, the line that could be drawn through his music and his film and television work was that he was attempting to broaden a vision of black life, and he was attempting to do it for black people, I think, because I think there's a difference between attempting to show the interior nuances of a black life with hopes that a white audience might accept and warm up to that kind of the quote-unquote idea of a black person or the idea of a black person's life. But it seemed to me like André Harrell was really working hard to widen the vision of what black people could be and could be capable of, and he was doing it for black folks.
Another sad loss this weekend on Sunday was the soul singer Betty Wright. She was 66 years old and the cause was cancer. How would you characterize Betty Wright's influence on the music world?
Well, I mean, I think that Betty Wright was someone who kind of sustained through generations. You know, I think the best, I mean, for me, one of the best Betty Wright albums is the one that came out in 2011, the Betty Wright, the movie with The Roots, or The Roots played on some of it. And, you know, so I think, and I think that was maybe one of her most successful albums, chart-wise. And, you know, as she, in her final, you know, final 5 to 7 years of her life, she was seamlessly kind of working with rappers, working with more contemporary artists. And this is, you know, decades away from, like, Clean Up Woman and Babysitter and her hits in the 70s. And so I think the great loss of Betty Wright was that we lost an artist who was seamlessly folding into a new generation of music and allowed herself to refine her voice again and again and again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her biggest hits, of course, were in the 70s, but her career spanned, you know, decades. She had really strong albums in every decade, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s to 2010s. And she was kind of someone who I thought was really fearless in how she was unafraid to turn corners, unafraid to try new sounds. Also, I think she was a vocalist who was respected and beloved by vocalists. And those are the ones that I think are really special.
I mean, she was also known for her mentorship, right? I mean, much like you mentioned with Little Richard and with André Harrell, in terms of influence of in ushering in new talent, it seems like Wright took a very active role in her mentorship with artists like Joss Stone and Jennifer Lopez. Why was mentorship so important to her?
Well, I mean, I think that there are artists for whom their legacy has to extend beyond just their work on record. She's someone who was sampled a ton. And she is someone who is well respected in hip hop. But also I think that she took a real investment in doing what she could to make sure that her style and her influence and her sound lived beyond herself and lived in younger artists as well. I think mentorship is the thing that extends legacy more than almost anything else. Passing down what one knows to someone else is a way to keep their name alive and keep their sound alive. Mm-hmm. And I think perhaps Betty Wright was invested in that because of those reasons.
Last week on this show, we talked about how the pandemic has really affected the live music scene and really decimated it right now. But we're also seeing some very creative bright spots, like the Versus Instagram battle between Jill Scott and Erykah Badu over the weekend. And I'm wondering what you make of these kinds of workaround performances and what it means for the performers and what it means for the viewers right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm often wondering how sustainable this will be whenever, you know, if we're to understand that there are some things in life that will be irreversibly changed, that's understandable. But whenever the day comes that we will be able to gather in groups again outdoors, will this sustain? Because I do think that there's a real excitement around not even necessarily the songs themselves and these song, quote-unquote, battles, but the dialogue between the musicians and mm-hmm. the ways that the songs are telling stories back and forth and the way the musicians are kind of, you know, and particularly with Jill Scott and Erykah Badu, it seemed like they were just really invested in the language and storytelling that their music was doing.
It and didn't feel like a battle at all. It felt like two old friends really enjoying each other's company and commentary.
I think I preferred that. That was much warmer to me and much more mm-hmm. exciting to me. And so I'm interested in the sustainability of this as a model. Is this something that can perhaps be transferred to a live space, like a real life space? Is this something that can be expanded upon in the outdoors in any way? Or is this something that we just get once a month for the rest of, you know, the rest of eternity or twice a month or something like that? You know, I do appreciate the inventiveness of the way musicians have found out how to use their platforms to reach people during this time. But I am also thinking about sustainability and what people have the bandwidth for, and how actually eager people will be outside among other people. And I think that too has yet to be seen, right? You know, if tomorrow something happened where magically the virus is entirely gone and people could go outside and gather in large groups again, I still think there'd be a lot of tentativeness about that. I still think people might not go to music festivals as eagerly if there were one next week. Mm-hmm. And so I think that these ways that folks have adapted have brought a lot of pleasure to people. And I'm interested in seeing how they could continue to adapt as restrictions loosen and things like that happen.
Hanif Abdurraqib is a poet, essayist, and cultural critic, and the author of several books, including Go Ahead in the Rain, Notes to a Tribe Called Quest. Hanif, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day.
And you've been telling us what these artists meant to you at 8778-MY-TAKE.
Hi, it's Elizabeth calling from my garden in Oakland. It was 1970. The Olympic Auditorium in Los Angeles went to see Jerry Lee Lewis with a bunch of other people, Albert King, I Know Country, John the Fish were supposed to play, but they never got to be on stage because when Little Richard was on stage, he invited everybody up to come on the stage and dance and sing, and there were people on top of the piano, and we were screaming and yelling and dancing, and all of a sudden the stage caved in. All you could hear was Little Richard cussing from underneath the stage, and the concert had to stop there because there was no stage.
My mom gave me the best Mother's Day gift I think I can get. She told me the story of when we were in Hollywood Boulevard. I think I was about 5. Little Richard came down in a limousine, and his head was out of the sunroof, and he was yelling and singing and just being, you know, Little Richard. And for some reason, he stopped in front of my family, got out, picked me up, did a little dance, kissed my little infant sister, shook my parents' hand, said, "You got a beautiful family," got back in his car, and drove off. We lost a true legend in rock and roll yesterday, and thank you, Little Richard. Rest in peace.
Little Richard to me was a pioneer and a hero, complicated as all heroes are, profane and spiritual, talented and yet conflicted. I hope to keep his memory alive by listening to his music, teaching my daughters about him, and hopefully being inspired by him not to be afraid. This is Kavika. I'm calling from Palm Desert.
Hi, this is Kathy calling from Portland, Oregon. Little Richard, he will live on forever through his music.
Hi, this is John. I'm calling from Vashon Island in Washington State. I thought he was the most dynamic performer that I had ever seen. Still think he was a marvelous person. I have kind of the same opinion that I had of Ali, who was very outspoken and straightforward and expressed himself well. Richard did that, too.
Hi, I'm Karen Kelly from San Jose, California. I'm 64 years old, and I remember being amazed at how the world accepted Little Richard, even though they might not have accepted others like him at the time, meaning his makeup and hair and dress, etc. Music can break down so many barriers.
Hi, calling from Miami, as an African-American artist, the passing of Little Richard and Andre Harrell and now Betty Wright, who is from Florida, Miami also, it's severely impactful. I even found myself crying about it today, partly because of the loss, you know, of our elders and of people who I've gotten to meet or who've impacted my life so much. So my father taught me about the history of Little Richard and how he was the architect of rock and roll, and how when he came out dressing this way, speaking this way, behaving this way, it was something people were not accustomed to seeing outside very small sects of our community. And so he was a real trailblazer. And Andre Harrell, genius, thoughtful person, writer, and artist, he brought all of this music into my life that has been some of the most impactful and profoundly wonderful thing as it relates to shaping who I am as an artist and a person.
Now, I know I can't be the only 90s kid who remembers Little Richard giving an unsurprisingly electrifying performance in recording the theme song for the Magic School Bus. His voice took us on that wild ride, rafting down a river of lava and getting baked into a pie. And hey, our phone lines are always open, so you can give us a call anytime at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Surfing on a sound wave, swinging through the stars. Yeah. Take a left at your intestine. Take your second right past Mars. On the Magic School Bus. Navigator nostril. I'm on the Magic School Bus. Make a plane turn two. Take that. On our Magic School Bus. Rock the river of lava. On the Magic School Bus. Such a fine thing.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.